And good morning. In for Elizabeth Harrison, I'm Chuck Hinman in Providence. Watching and waiting this morning along the Patuxent and Pawcatuck Rivers in Rhode Island. Flood warnings remain along those rivers, both above flood stage, and that rain expected to let up today. The Republican leader in the Rhode Island House believes debate over whether to pay back bonds for 38 studios is holding up the state budget. As Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis reports, the next fiscal year begins in less than 3 weeks, on July 1st.
The House usually puts its imprint on the governor's budget and then passes it in mid to late June. On occasion, the deliberations have stretched into July. House Minority Leader Brian Newberry of North Smithfield says lower than expected state revenue is only part of the explanation.
The revenue estimates were off. That forced some realignment in some of the negotiations between House and Senate Democratic leadership. But I think the big issue right now is whether or not to pay the 38 studios bonds. I think that's the big hang-up at the moment.
House spokesman Larry Berman says there's nothing unusual about how the chamber's budget has yet to emerge. He says the main reason for the delay is how projected state revenues came in tens of millions of dollars below expectations. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Newberry spoke during Rhode Island Public Radio's political roundtable. The full segment can be heard this morning at 7:40. At the Rhode Island State House yesterday, lawmakers reviewed a plan to boost vehicle inspection fees in order to raise money for bridge maintenance, all this as an alternative to that plan to impose tolls on the Sakonnet River Bridge. The Senate Finance Committee talked about the proposal yesterday that would increase the biannual inspection fees from $39 to $65. Research teams from the University of Rhode Island, Brown University, and Roger Williams University will share over $800,000 from the state to study the effects of climate change on the state's coastal environment. The projects include a look at invasive algae in Narragansett Bay, climate effects on shrimp, and a disease-killing starfish in the Northeast. The research funds come from the State Economic Development Corporation.
At Trinity Rep these nights, 14 professional actors and half as many kids are romping and stomping, racing and rushing from the upstairs theater to the downstairs theater. This is no exercise program. It's actually the performance of two separate plays by a single cast, performing simultaneously. The troopers fly from one play to another, changing costumes and characters all night long. The plays are a pair of comedies with a point by British author Alan Ayckbourn, and they, well, why don't we have a pro talk about that? Here is Trinity Rep's Fred Sullivan Jr., a veteran of no less than 110 productions at Trinity. Welcome, Fred.
Hi, Bill. It's very good to be here.
Quickly, tell us just a little bit about these plays. One is called House, the other is called Garden.
In the upstairs theater is a play called House, and in the downstairs theater, the Dowling Theater, it's The Chase and the Dowling at Trinity, and in the Chase Theater is House with a brilliant manor house set by Eugene Lee, and downstairs is an equally brilliant set by Eugene Lee of a beautiful garden with people who are familiar with Trinity know we have those two huge poles, and they are beautiful trees where the branches go over the audience. It's the story of two couples who live next door to each other about 3 hours outside of London, the Maces and the Platts. And I'm Teddy Platt, who owns the house. And downstairs is our garden where we're having our annual fete. We're having a party with kids and neighbors and people come and buy jams and play games. So it's a very special day. But there are also intrigue, plot devices such as my political career.
So this is not a gimmick, then?
Oh, no. It couldn't be further from a gimmick. Sir Alan Ayckbourn wrote it as a present to himself on his 60th birthday because he is the artistic director of a theater with two theaters and a resident acting company. So what you really need to be able to be successfully to pull this off is just that, two theaters and a resident acting company. And lo and behold, that's just what Trinity Rep has.
Right. That's always been a strength of Trinity, is risk-taking from day one.
Absolutely.
And I would assume that you find this to be fitting right in.
Remarkably unique. You say I've done 110 plays there. Nothing like this. Nothing like this. This is, I leave the stage of the upstairs theater with one audience, and walk down two flights of stairs right onto the stage of in front of a different audience. And some nights, like the past two nights, House was raucous on Tuesday night, and then Wednesday night Garden was raucous, and we have it all timed to about 90 seconds. So if people laugh for 3 minutes during the play, we kind of say, oh, should we speed this up? Should we slow this down? There are a series of lights in the vomitoriums and the exits that let us know to go faster or slower. It's so unique. There's a guy in the bathroom. I go open the door, and the guy in the kitchen stands there and gives me a thumbs up or thumbs down if the next actor is already up from the other play.
Has anybody failed to get to their station?
There's a brilliant description of sex, actually, in the Act Two of Garden, where I say, it's a bloody brilliant invention. It's all made to fit. This bit goes in there, and everybody has a good time. And that's exactly what he wrote. He wrote it all to fit. And so there are tight calls, and we do have kind of emergency improvisations in place that Yes. We said, oh, what's going to happen? Are these going to fit? They remarkably really do fit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I actually can sit on a bench for all of 30 seconds before I can catch my breath and have a little glass of water before I go back out onto the stage again. I'm having a ball.
I'll bet. You are also probably have the biggest role. You're certainly the most prominent role on stage. Was there a problem in memorizing the scripts?
No. It's always hard. Shakespeare in iambic pentameter is easier because it has a rhythm, and yet there are words we haven't used in 400 years. Everything is, and let me tell you, Bill, each year that goes by, it's a little harder to keep things in your brain.
No, is that right?
So, yeah, I think I do know that to be true because I do. It was a heavy workload, and some people were saying, do you learn your lines before you start rehearsal? The great thing about the Trinity process is we actually rehearsed for 10 weeks because it was two plays. This was the longest contract I've ever signed in 30 years. And we had two rehearsal halls next to each other. We have three stage managers. The third stage manager is in the paint shop with a setup that looks like NASA, TV screens that have cameras in the elevator, on the stairwell, everything but in the bathroom. And he's there to say, okay, Stephen Thorne is still on stage and they're coming up for his cue in the other play. We need to. So it's all kind of timed down to the last wave of the brakeman's hand, as Harold Hill says.
All of this was a challenge, but kind of a charming challenge. Mm. I've talked to other actors. That's what I hear from them.
I think we loved this. I think that this year, the other big kind of tentpole show was the King Lear that we brought to Dallas. And that was half our company and half of their company. This one is all Trinity. It's just all of us kind of in a big cast. The other plays this year were rather small. And so it's kind of an event of the year to get everybody out there on the stage, pretty much the whole company, and to have everybody doing what they do really well, because it's not just a farce. It has incredible melancholy, dark moments. They're all three-dimensional characters. He's really a wonderful writer.
Thank you very much, Fred Sullivan, veteran actor at Trinity Rep.
Thanks so much, Bill. It was my pleasure. It's always fun.
Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, the Republican leader in the Rhode Island House of Representatives, Brian Newberry of North Smithfield. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Ian. Thank you for having me.
At the start of the session, legislative leaders said they'd focus on the economy, but as it stands, the House and Senate have slightly different approaches for reshaping the State Economic Development Corporation, and Governor Lincoln Chafee wants to keep things the way they are. Brian, what would you say about the question of what exactly do you expect the General Assembly to accomplish this year in terms of focusing on the economy?
Well, we're here in the middle of June with about 2 weeks left in the session, and other than the same-sex marriage bill, we've actually passed absolutely nothing of consequence. With respect to the EDC and the reshaping of that and the Secretary of Commerce position, those are interesting discussions. And as I said during the floor debate in the House, the House's plan may make some sense. It may be a minor improvement on things, but it's hardly a game changer in terms of the economy. So right now, we haven't done anything. It's ridiculous.
Maureen, is this any way to run a railroad? As the rep said, we have a couple of weeks left to go, and there are all this legislation still hanging out there.
Yeah, I tend to agree, because I think that this whole idea of restructuring at this late day time in the day or time in the session is imprudent. I do think maybe what may come out of this is some form of legislation introduced in the Senate whereby the commonalities in the two proposals have to do with accountability and looking at evaluations when it comes to some of the things that the EDC is going to do. Whether they rename it or not, I don't think that matters. But I think you might see something there, and I think that at least is a step in the right direction.
Scott, what do you expect to emerge between the House and Senate in their slightly different ideas for reshaping the EDC?
If I were them, I'd take a deep breath and give the new EDC director, Marcel Valois, a shot at actually running the agency. He did a very good job back in the 1990s when he worked for Governor Lincoln Almond, and maybe he ought to be given a shot. One of the things that just drives you crazy is they're trying to pass a law getting people not to do stupid things. And the fact is, a lot of this is just reaction to the 38 Studios fiasco, when really people shouldn't do stupid things, and no law that you pass is going to make that happen. The other thing is, I'm not sure it's smart to have a Secretary of Commerce with power over the environmental agency. I think that's a really slippery slope.
There's no word yet on when the House version of Governor Chafee's budget will emerge. Let's ask House Minority Leader Brian Newberry what he thinks about what key differences you're expecting in from the governor's own budget.
I think if you went back to mid-April and you asked me that same question, I would have said very little, and I would have said we'd be out of there by now. In fact, when we booked this session, I thought we'd be done. I think what happened was two things. The revenue estimates were off. That forced some realignment in some of the negotiations between House and Senate Democratic leadership. But I think the big issue right now is whether or not to pay the 38 Studios bonds. I think that's the big hang-up at the moment. So to answer your question, I don't know when we're going to see a budget, although we're supposed to do it within the next 2 weeks.
Scott, as the minority leader said, revenue expectations did come in tens of million dollars below expectations. How do you expect this to impact the budget?
Well, you don't know because all this stuff is done, as we know, in private. The leadership sits around in a room up at the State House, and after the bottle of bourbon comes out and everybody talks around the table, they finally come to an agreement, and really, the public is pretty much shut out of the process.
Maureen, what are you keeping your eye on in terms of the budget?
Well, the one thing that's interesting to me is, at this point, it usually comes down to the budget per se. But what's happened now is they continue to be bogged down on reorganization. They continue to be bogged down on 38 Studios and whether to put that $2.5 million in. Things like the Electoral College. I mean, it's very interesting in the sense that as the session ends, it always is about the budget. And now it's all over the place. So it's really hard to predict what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think one thing that's interesting is the lawsuit on 38 Studios. Because, look, all of these big players here, Wells Fargo, the banks, the law firms, they all have large malpractice insurance. And they don't want this thing to go to trial. So there could be some settlements that they could recover $20, $30, $40 million from these folks. And we have to, so I think they maybe should just pay the first installment and see what the lawsuit does.
Well, speaking of the end of the year rush, there's been a last minute push to pass new casino legislation ahead of the opening of new table games at Twin River in Lincoln. The debut of these games wasn't a secret. So why wasn't this legislation considered a bit more proactively, Scott?
Well, because that's the way the legislature works. Sometimes I think it's like Christmas at a department store or April 15th at the post office. I mean, this has been going on for over 100 years. I remember there's a great thing about Governor Theodore Francis Green, later became governor. He was a young rep in 1907, and it was his first term, and he was a guy who was, at that point, a professor at Brown, and he was appalled at the way that they passed this hundreds and hundreds of bills at the last minute. And here we are, like I say, 110 years later, and bang, they're still doing it the same way.
Let's go to Minority Leader Newberry.
Well, I'm never one to shy away from criticizing the House and Senate leadership when appropriate. In this instance, though, I think the reason the bill is coming out this late has more to do with the governor's office. I know in private discussions with him, they have told me, and I believe them, they really were trying to, as they put it, do the right thing. Now, you know, whether that gives us enough time to properly consider it, I don't know. I haven't even read the bill yet. It just came out. So I'm going to be asked probably to vote on this thing within a week, and I haven't been able to read it. What is it, 55 pages or something like that? So the process is really ridiculous, but the question of fault this time, I think it's not. It probably lies more at the governor's office.
What do you say, Maureen?
I say this is the third largest source of revenue. And I say that there are issues coming down the road with gambling in Massachusetts. And I am really stunned that this isn't the exception to the rule insofar as it's important to get done. You would think the lobbyists from Twin River would want to be working on this. So while
I'm sure they have been.
But this is a typical pattern. This may be a typical pattern. But I think this should have been the exception when and whether it's at the legislative leadership level or at the governor's office, they really have to come through with something.
The pattern that we've seen with casino legislation in general is it tends to come out late in the session. When bills come out late in the session and they quote-unquote have to be passed, that's an easier time for the leadership to get votes out of people who are otherwise reluctant to do it. Whereas if they come out in March, they can get held up, they get amended, they get fought over. Now it's kind of like, we don't do this, the sky is going to fall, and that may be a tactic too.
Debate continues over whether the state should default on the moral obligation bonds due to the failure of video game maker 38 Studios. Minority Leader Newberry, do you agree with your Republican colleagues in the Senate and Republican Chairman Mark Smiley that the state should not pay back these moral obligation bonds?
If we are going to pay what it will amount to in total, not this year, but over the course of the bonds, $89 million in taxpayer money to essentially Wall Street outfits under a moral obligation that the state doesn't have a legal obligation to pay, I need to be given a very good reason. And the only reason that I could be given would be evidence that would show, not speculation, but actual evidence that would show that the fiscal hit to the state through its bond rating and credit would be worse not paying it than paying it. To date, I have not seen that evidence. So if I were to vote right now, I would not vote to repay them.
What do you say, Maureen?
I'd like to ask, do you think there's a middle ground here in the sense that as we move along, do you think there are some negotiations that it could at least lessen the hit in the sense that we could settle out at some for something less rather than completely refuse?
That may be a possibility, but when you're negotiating something, you don't just give money up front. So the idea that we would pay the $2.5 million now, you don't negotiate with people like that. What you say is we're not going to pay it. Sue us or whatever you, how you want to put it, and then you negotiate.
Yeah, but they're only putting it in the budget. They're not putting it out.
Well, but you know what? You send a signal. As soon as you start paying this down, that's a signal that you're willing to pay more of it down in theory. If you want to negotiate on this, you take a tough stand on this because we do not have a legal obligation to pay it. The only threat is to our bond rating.
Scott, it seems like Minority Leader Newberry is expressing some appropriate skepticism on this issue. Where do you see this headed in the General Assembly?
Well, I think we're going to have a full employment frittata for lawyers if what Leader Newberry describes and what I've talked about earlier, if the judge lets the Chafee administration lawsuit against these folks go forward and we decide not to pay, I mean, this is going to be tangled up. It's going to end up in court. And frankly, nobody can predict what's going to happen there.
No, we might learn a little bit more about the history of the transaction if that happens.
So that's
and I would look forward to that.
One other contentious issue in the General Assembly is the tolls on the Sakonnet River Bridge. East Bay legislators and merchants say this will devastate the economy in that part of Rhode Island. Where do you see, and there is some legislation to fund bridge maintenance through other mechanisms, where do you see this headed, Minority Leader?
You know, it's hard to say. I voted against the tolls in last year's budget, but being that I represent North Smithfield and Boroughville, I'm probably the last person in the state that any of my constituents care about this issue. On the other hand, for the reps from the East Bay and from Newport County, they're under tremendous pressure. So the reality is this, if they want to bind together to force the leadership to do something about the tolls, they've got the power to do it. That's up to them. Whether they have the willingness to do it, well, you know, who knows?
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Thank you.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And the Republican leader in the House of Representatives, Brian Newberry.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.